Welcome to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Hiles. And in today's episode, we're going to be discussing the reading crisis, getting an early start, with our guest, Dr. Marion Blank. But before we proceed further, I want to share just a little bit about today's guest with you. Dr. Marion Blank is one of the leading experts in literacy and child development today. She's been a consultant for Sesame Street, has won major awards like the Upton Sinclair Award and a Career Development Award from NIH, the National Institutes of Health, and her programs have helped thousands of educators and families worldwide. Welcome to the show again, Dr. Blank. Glad to have you again.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here again.
All righty. Would you like to take a moment to share your experience with our audience?
This is interesting because I was a classmate of Jane Goodall in England, but we never met because she was always in Africa. But one of the things she said is that her love of her work began when she was 2 or 3 years old and her mother got her an animal pet that she wanted. And my love of language began when I was very young. Many of my relatives came from Eastern Europe and they weren't able to go to school and they were illiterate. And I remember seeing my father step aside once and a relative of mine wrote an X on the paper and then my father gave his signature. And I was asking what was that about? So I was just learning to read at that time. So I said, I'm going to help all these people learn to read. They've got to learn to read. So it started very young. And I've been very lucky to be able to pursue it in a lot of ways. And often there are battles and so on, but the work is always exciting and interesting and very important.
Okay. Thank you for the insights there, Dr. Blank. Let me ask you, excuse me, we've spent decades trying to improve reading scores.
Yeah.
Yet millions of children may still struggle today.
Yeah.
And you maintain that the reading problem has its roots in skills, many of which begin before the children ever even open up a book. Well, what are most educators missing?
That's a very good question. And one of the things that's unfortunate about our nation is we pay very little attention to history. Because I'm quite old, I've lived through a lot of decades and change. So when I started out in reading decades ago, everyone thought it was a visual problem because reading is visual and the kids were having trouble reading. So they said, this is a visual problem. And I did some very important work, which has been reprinted in many places. And I started writing about the language skills needed for reading. And it was very controversial, but that has unfortunately taken over to such an extent that we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater. Right. So there are lots of things that are very important in the teaching of reading that are just not being attended to. So for example, one of the things that people don't pay attention to, I had it in one of my programs. I don't know if the program is still out there, because a lot of my programs I don't have control over. But one of the things I began to teach very early on was the left to right sequencing of language, of reading. One of the amazing things is it's totally different from other visual processing. In other visual processing, when they draw scans of it, people's eyes are moving around all over the place and are most drawn to if there's another animate being, like in a picture. There are a series of rules that govern the way we look at the visual world. None of those rules hold for reading because nothing in our visual world requires us to go step by step by step in a steady left-right direction. In Arabic, it'll be a right-left direction.
Right.
But many languages involve this kind of sequence. It's very easy to teach. And I was consulting in a school for the deaf, and I tried to get them, and we got the kids doing very well with literacy, but I tried initially to get them to teach the left-right sequencing, and they said, no one ever does that. We don't want to do it. So that's one of the skills. And there are there is another skill, which is a kind of combination of visual and language. It's the skill of naming. Naming is what old people can't do when you say, oh, I know, you know that guy, you know, he lives down on Smith Street, you know, and, oh yeah, Joe, that's it, it's Joe. Mm-hmm. Now, a naming problem in old age is very common, unfortunately. Most kids don't have naming problems, but kids with naming problems are invariably poor readers, because a naming problem in vision affects only nouns and major figures. So, or in speaking, I was going to say. So that, for example, in a sentence like, there was a man standing in that place, there's only one name, man. That's, and so it doesn't affect much of language. But when a child with a naming problem comes in to reading, every word becomes a name, because you are having to label with a sound that particular letter. Okay. So a naming problem in spoken language, which is usually looks fairly minor, the kids don't have as good a vocabulary, but is really not that important. But when it comes to reading, initial reading, it's naming, 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 naming. One of the best tests to see if a child is going to be a poor reader is was one developed by a colleague, Rita Rudell. And it's used now a lot, but then people, and no one has exact figures, but it's probably somewhere around 60% of children with reading problems have naming problems. And everything that is done in the teaching is very bad for a child with a naming problem. You can't use a phonics approach with a child with a naming problem, because it makes everything get a name. And a cat is now three names. And so I'd be very interested in not simply finding out what the trouble is, but in creating alternatives to help the children overcome troubles.
Okay. You know, one of your major contributions, Dr. Blank, involves what language specialists call non-content words.
Right.
The strange little words like the, is, was, and in. Yep. Why are those small words so important for you to become a successful reader?
It's a great question and a very important one. It's people who do most teaching in reading, which is basically a phonics approach, say, well, there are only 100 of those words around. There are only 200 altogether, and ones like whereas and heretofore don't matter. So there are only 100 there. We'll teach them. We hold them up as sight words.
Uh-huh.
Sight words. What people don't realize is 100 of these words occupies about 60 to 65% of everything we say, everything we read, everything we write, and everything we hear.
Wow.
It is. So if a child can read every content word perfectly, which is rare in a child who has a reading problem, he still can be totally floored by the non-content words, because they're the majority of the words on a page. Okay. And the kids really have enormous trouble with these words, because they go to a different center, a different language processing center in the brain. And none of the teaching has been designed to help the kids process it in those centers.
Well, so how should a teacher teach those words then?
Well, what I do is, what I've done in my various reading programs, is I teach them, I teach everything to overlearning, so that the child, overlearning when allows a child to get ready recognition of words. And I teach basically 100 non-content words and 100 content words, intermix them, but mm-hmm. each word takes approximately 30 to 40 minutes to teach. It's extensive. They learn one word a day. But once you get the children over the hump, for some children, it's learning comfortably 30 to 40% of these words. So some kids need all 100. But once they have that, They can read just like an effective reader can read.
It's okay.
But the teacher's not given the materials. I've been trying to give those material, but for example, one of my programs, which won a special education award in software back in 1989, no school could use it because I didn't use a phonics approach. So what phonics has done is not simply taken over the field. They don't allow alternative approaches in, which is a very unfortunate state of affairs.
Yeah. So basically teaching one non-content word a day. Is that
no, what one content word, one non-content.
Oh, okay.
They'll vary. So, but each word is taught in what's called overlearning. Because overlearning allows the child to get instant word recognition. Okay. And what you've got to do, I think, is develop on a basic core group of words, instant word recognition. Once the children have that, and it'll vary. As I say, some children will get it by 50 words. Some kids will get it by 100 words. Once they have that, they can read just like a good reader.
Okay.
The Teacher Rockstar Academy course is meticulously designed to equip you with the tools and strategies needed to skyrocket your effectiveness as a teacher. Curious to know if the Teacher Rockstar Academy course is the missing piece in your teaching journey? If you're ready to reclaim control of your classroom and witness the incredible impact on your students, then use the link in the podcast description to learn more about this program.
I noticed a moment ago you brought up phonics, which leads me to what I want to ask you now. Many reading programs focus heavily on phonics, as you know, and sounding out words. Well, you argue that language structure must also be included.
Oh, absolutely.
And why?
It covers a huge range of material, but I'll just take one issue, the past tense. Most people don't talk about it, but most reading material, or a very high percentage, is in the past tense. That's why you use language. We don't use language basically to describe what's in front of us. Autistic children do it because that's what they've been trained to do. But if someone sits down and says, oh, there is a glass, it has water in it, I can drink the water, you know that child is a very strange child. People don't talk like that. People talk about, oh, I just saw a dog. He was so big and he was so... Everything's in the past tense. And what I did here, I took a book, for example, for toddlers. And it's all in the past tense. Here, once upon a... It's a book about a cute little elephant named Ellie. Mm-hmm. Once upon a time in a sunny land, lived a little elephant named Ellie. Ellie loved music more than anything else, but she hadn't found her instrument yet. So there are 27 words, 18 of them are non-content words.
Well, okay.
Do you understand? So what we have now, what phonics often does is says to the kids, don't bother with, there are some phonics problems that don't even teach these words because they say they're not important. What's a the, what's an is, you know, let's not teach.
Well,
if you don't teach it, you don't have language.
Right.
And so that's one of the things, it's really interesting. According to what I've read, I have the only program that really focuses on, when I'm dealing with very seriously language impaired children, on developing the past tense. The past tense is absolutely critical to the use of language because one of the ways that language really comes into its own. You want to describe what isn't there because you've got something to tell, or you describe what isn't there because you want to get it there. But so the discussion, the content is extremely important.
Yeah, because I think you said the non-content words, if I'm not mistaken, then you say it comprise about 60%?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that's a large amount.
In the passage I gave you, that's the case. One of the interesting things is the quintessential book on phonics, The Cat in the Hat. Wasn't it The Cat in the Hat? Or I think that's what it was. But anyway, three of the five words in a book focused on phonics are non-content words.
I see. I see. So you have to teach both.
Yes, exactly. And and you've we just haven't been doing it. So we're leaving the kids to face a situation that is unbelievably hard for them because every other word is one they're not familiar with or takes a long time.
You know, Dr. Blank, I don't, why do you think that is? Why do you think that teachers, and this would be a good thing for, because I have a lot of new teachers on here.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously, and this would be valuable to them. Why do you think that's they're not being taught like that?
There's an old proverb. I love proverbs. They're dying now. No one uses them. But there's a proverb that says the fish is the last one to discover water. And we are the last ones who really understand language, even though we use it all the time.
Uh-huh.
And so, for example, if you say to someone, they used to do a lot of this. It's called a kind of word association thing. You say to someone, come up with a word. And people, and then they analyze what people come up with. They'll come up with yellow. They'll come up with grass. They'll come up with man. They'll come up. They know no one ever comes up with a non-content word. No one says, if they think of a word, no one says, that's a good word.
Yeah.
It is something that is, it's almost like oxygen was never found because people couldn't see it. When people talked about oxygen, they said, are you out of your mind? If it was there, I'd see it. And it's the same thing with the non-content words. It's there. And one of the interesting things is we all have amnesia for how we learn language, both spoken language and written language. One of the things that is really fascinating, it was in the work of Roger Brown at Harvard many years ago. They studied three children, every utterance these kids made from 0 to 5 years of age, these three children. And what they found is roughly in stage two of language, it's after the children learn things like doggy and want ice cream and stuff like that. They spend about 6 to 7 months learning 14 non-content words. Because they are the key to learning how to break the code of language. When those little two-year-olds hear a the, they know a noun is coming. When they hear an is, they know a verb is coming. Mm-hmm. And they know somehow they've been built, they have this built-in sensor. They know that this is the key to cracking the language code. And they're desperate to do that. So they know it. They spend tons of time on it. Everyone who's listening to this program did it when they were a child. Not one of them, including me, remembers that this was any problem at all. It took up months of your life, but you've totally forgotten it. And that's
dark.
They call it infantile amnesia. It's amazing.
Let me ask you, Dr. Blank, if a parent, let's say, has a child who is struggling to learn to read,
yeah.
What is the first thing that parent should look for?
Well, first, there are only about three main things you have to look. First of all, if the child... I'm talking about at the beginning process, because if a child has not learned to read, they hate reading. But at the beginning, all the kids want to learn to read. And if a kid is having difficulty and says, I don't like that book, I don't want to do the book, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do the sounds. So if there's a strong negative set of emotions, that's a major marker. The second is if there's a high rate of error on the work he's being given from school that he comes home with. So that there should be almost no error whatsoever. But 5 to 10% is okay. But if a child is showing high rates of error, it's almost certain that he's got a reading problem. So between the emotion of avoiding reading and the emotions of making mistakes, those are the two big markers. And if those are present, a parent should try and follow up and see what can be done.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Blank, let me ask you this for our audience out there. What is your biggest takeaway that you'd like to share with folks? I mean, I know there's probably many, but if you could just pick one.
Well, the thing is, Margaret Mead, who was a very famous anthropologist, had said, that said the following: never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. I think now we have the information that we need. We know we have a high rate of failure. Our reading statistics are terrible nationwide. But we also, the powers that be are not looking at that information, but we have the information that can allow every child to be a successful leader. And I've taught children from all over the world. People come to me where they were told, your child will never read. And we've always been successful.
So you think that, take phonics, for example, phonics programs shouldn't be so rigid and be able to incorporate what are best practices with respect to, like you said, the non-content words?
Well, I think that, see, what's happened is, because phonics is so powerful, they have said, they don't call themselves phonics anymore. They call themselves the science of reading. And if these schools are required only to use that, these rules have to be changed. That alternative programs, we'd set some guidelines, should be fostered and developed, because we know we're not doing a good job with what we have. And we have the information. It's there, but it won't be there if we're never allowed to use it.
I see. Well, let me ask you one final thing, Dr. Blank. How could people get a hold of you should they want to reach out and connect with you?
Oh, thank you. My email is drmariansformula@gmail.com. And our website is now drmariansformula.com. So they can reach us through either one.
All righty. And I'll make sure I post them in the show notes as well
for
folks to see. Well, Dr. Blank, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us about the state of our reading here in this country. And just thank you so much. And I appreciate your time.
Oh, I appreciate your time, and I thank you so much for letting me express these ideas.
All right. Okay. Well, we have come to the end of today's episode of the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Hiles, and we will see you same time, same place next week. And remember, my friend, you got this.
You've been listening to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast with your host, Steve Hiles. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast as much as we have. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and join our ever-growing community of teacher rock stars. Until then, thanks for listening.